Baseball PhD Interview to Remember, 2010.
This next interview comes from Episode 4, New York Yankees.
Author Jonathan Eich is definitely one of our favorites here at Baseball PhD. He appeared twice in our 2010 season. Here, he's interviewed about his book, Luckiest Man.
Let's learn more about Yankees great, Lou Gehrig. A big baseball PhD welcome to author Jonathan Eich. Hi, Jonathan. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Ed?
I'm honored to be talking to you because you are the author of Luckiest Man, which was the best baseball book of 2005. And to set the stage, I just got done watching Pride of the Yankees, and I forgot how great Lou Gehrig was. How great was he? You had the ability to research for how long before you wrote your book?
I spent about 3 years researching the book and writing the book. And I can tell you without a doubt that I think Gehrig is the greatest first baseman in the history of the game, even today, with Albert Pujols making a strong run at him, but he's got to do at least another, eight or nine years from Pujols before he can pass Gehrig as the greatest first baseman of all time.
Wow. Now, the movie itself, how true was it to reality?
Not very. It's a sweet movie. If anything, I think that Gary Cooper's way too soft to play Lou Gehrig. I mean, Gehrig was an incredibly big, strong, tough guy. He was very sensitive, but he was a really beast, and that doesn't come across with Gary Cooper. And a lot of the facts of the movie are Hollywoodized. Hollywood just loved to exaggerate and to play up certain relationships and not others. And of course, they took all the edges off of the story. There's no sex. There's no scandal. There's no conflict. But I thought it's still a sweet movie. It's still fun to watch.
Now, was Mrs. Gehrig, the wife, not the mother, was she the most influential person in Lou Gehrig's life?
I think she was certainly the most influential person in the last part of Lou Gehrig's life. Gehrig's mother was an incredible influence on him, and he was, if there were a Hall of Fame for Mama's Boys, Gehrig would be right up there in the first class, because he just adored his mother, and he continued to live with his mother until he was 30. He wanted to continue to live with his mother even after he got married.
Wow.
But his wife put her foot down and said, no, that's
got to draw the
happen.
Line.
Yeah.
What an oxymoron to have the greatest, studliest first baseman also be a mama's boy.
Oh yeah, terrible. He was a very sensitive, nervous kid in many ways, and as a result of that, he was very shy. He didn't fit in very well in the clubhouse because when the other guys went out drinking, and this was the Roaring Twenties, and
right.
Babe Ruth, who was the most fun guy to be around in the history of Major League Baseball, perhaps. When they went out drinking after ball games, he went home to Mama to help set the table for dinner. So he had a very hard time fitting in with the rest of the team.
Wow. Well, in the next 5 minutes, if you had to sit down with anyone in the world and give them a briefing on Gehrig and what we don't know, what's the most important things that we don't know about Gehrig?
I think we don't really know what made him tick in many ways. He was so private, so quiet. Think about how many autobiographies Babe Ruth wrote and how many interviews he gave to the press. Gehrig really shunned the spotlight, and he cared only about the game. And I think that's part of what makes him so attractive today, is that he
right.
was a simple guy. But I wish that he could have opened up a little more and expressed himself, and that we could have really gotten to know him a little better. I also think that there's a great deal of mystery about how he got sick and died. No one to this day knows what causes ALS. And Lou Gehrig's disease, as it's referred to. I was very fortunate in my research to find 200 letters that he wrote as he was dying to his doctor that explained what was going on with his body and what was going on in his mind and how he was dealing with the disease. But there's still so much about that we don't know. The letters trailed off in the last 6 months of his
right.
life, and I would love to have talked to some people who spent time with him then to see how he handled those last horrible months.
From a medical standpoint, has there been great advancements in the treatment of Lou Gehrig's disease?
Sadly, no. It's really a same. They can keep you alive a little bit longer because they have ventilators now, and there are some drugs that slightly extend the lifespan, but we really don't know much more now than we did when Gehrig developed the disease. It's very sad and very frustrating.
It's amazing. Think how much the world has changed since 1939, and they still haven't made much inroads about that.
Right.
Speaking of 1939, I'll give you a date, and you'll be able to run with it. July 4th, 1939. It might be one of the most important days or most memorable days in baseball history.
That's right, Lou Gehrig Day, Yankee Stadium, and he says goodbye, and he makes the speech that is not just the greatest speech in baseball history, but it's one of the greatest speeches in American history. It's as well known to baseball fans, certainly, as the Gettysburg Address.
Right.
When Gehrig stood up there and said, you may have heard that I got a bad break, but today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Now, one of the things that I learned by reading the first page of your book, Luckiest Man, was that Gehrig was very reluctant and he almost did not give a speech.
Yeah, he didn't want the day to be held in his honor at all. But when he agreed to it, right up to the last minute, he was hoping that he could get out of it without having to speak. And he was standing up there, you know, as all these presentations were made and all these politicians and his former teammates came up and gave speeches. And he actually told the MC that he should wrap it up, that he was done, that it, you know, it was done, he wasn't going to speak. And then his manager, Joe McCarthy, just came up behind him, gave him a little push up to the microphone, and off the top of his head, Gehrig gave this amazing speech that really changed Gehrig's image forever, because until
right.
that moment, people took him for granted. They didn't realize that there was a thoughtful human being behind the uniform. He's
right.
always such a machine, you know, showed up every day to play, did his job, never complained, a picture of consistency, and yet here was this incredibly emotional, thoughtful, sensitive man who was so brave that even when he knew he was dying, he considered himself lucky to have been a Yankee. That was the moment that the Gehrig legend really was born.
Right. And in the movie Pride of the Yankees, it did not even show his reluctance to speak. And from a historical perspective, his entire speech was never recorded. Is that correct?
Well, it may have been recorded, but it's been lost.
Okay.
I suspect the newsreel cameras recorded the whole thing, but then they cut it up and only used little snippets in the movie reels. And today, as far as I know, as far as I can tell from my research, nobody has a complete copy of that speech. I was able to piece it together as best I could based on the various newspaper accounts. And I think I've got a fairly accurate version of the speech in the book, but nobody knows exactly.
Now, so it took you 3 years to write Luckiest Man, and you're scheduled to release your next work on April 27th, and that's called Capone. Why don't you tell our listeners about your new book?
Yeah, it's called Get Capone.
Oh, Get Capone.
It's a biography of Al Capone with a heavy emphasis on the government's pursuit of the legendary gangster. And I began this book with the discovery of thousands of pages of government files that nobody had seen, showing why the government made a scapegoat out of Al Capone and how they decided to pursue him and how they eventually built their case. And some of the details in there were just shocking. I think people think they know Al Capone from The Untouchables. If you want to talk about movies, again, there's another great movie that doesn't get the story even close to right. I think people think they have this image of Capone in their heads, and when they read this book, they're going to be amazed at what the true story is.
Is the true story that he's a nastier guy?
No, actually, he's not a nastier guy. He's a much more interesting, much more complicated guy, and he was a normal guy who turned into a gangster because Prohibition gave him the opportunity to get incredibly rich, and he turned into this violent thug, but he didn't start out that way.
So from a historical perspective, I know that in the little website you had, and I think you started following Capone, or he started becoming a bad guy about at the age of 21. What year was this? It sounds like he was a historical peer of Lou Gehrig.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, Capone was a huge baseball fan, and no doubt he saw Gehrig and Ruth play. He was a Cubs fan and would go to Wrigley Field often. A huge sports fan all around. But Capone really started his career at about the same time as Gehrig. Capone is 4 years older than Gehrig, and Capone's career started in around 1920-21 when he was really just a bouncer working in some saloons. But by 1927, when Gehrig is coming into his prime, that's when Capone is coming into his prime as the leader of the Chicago outfit.
Right. And I get, you know, now I'm thinking of the song, Only the Good Die Young. Capone outlived Gehrig.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I also wrote a book about Jackie Robinson, and Capone lived long enough to see Jackie Robinson make the major leagues, 1947. Wow. He died that year.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Jonathan, and I've started to read your book, Luckiest Man. It's nothing short of spectacular, and I can't wait to read your next book on Capone, and I think any baseball PhD should understand the historical significance of both the great guys like Gehrig and even the bad guys like Capone, because they're all interrelated. These same guys cheered either for or against Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig.
That's right. They're all part of the same planet, and they were actually traveling in some of the same circles, which it's sometimes we don't think about that. We think of these baseball players operating within their own universe.
This has been a Baseball PhD production. Copyright 2010.